So, hey, this is just natural.
Right.
Not for the TV audience, because there isn't one.
Right, right. Senator Daley, thank you for
the greeting.
And Senator Tomasoni, welcome back. I know you were on the floor yesterday, but we officially welcome you back
as
part of this committee.
Absolute pleasure to be here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that.
You're looking good.
I want to thank all you that sent all the cards and flowers and chocolates and visits and messages and emails, and it was very nice of all you.
It's great to have you back.
And Senator Tomasoni, we really had a good trip up to your part of the world.
Did you like the mine?
Yes.
The taconite plant is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the day went too fast, and then we enjoyed a northern Minnesota blizzard to bring our
way
back.
I was happy you guys all made it back, because that was a bad day. The size of the equipment in the mines is really impressive, isn't it?
Unbelievable.
Every time I go there, it's like, holy. And they get bigger and bigger. Back in the days when I worked.
It's time we got here.
Whoa. I guess Senator Metz.
And Metzen's back, too. So anyway. But just so you guys know, back in the days when I worked in the mines back in the mid-70s, the trucks were 35,000 tonners. Now they're 240,000 tonners and 350,000 tonners. That's why we're producing the same amount of material with a fourth of the workforce. You know, so
Senator Michelle, I have
Senator
a question.
Greif.
Senator Tomasoni, is that as bad as the weather gets up there? Because if that's as bad as you got, we're going to come back again someday.
No, that was easy on us. I was worried about you guys, though.
Well, members, we're going to hear from a couple groups this morning, and so I'm going to just jump right into it. So if I could ask the Minnesota Partnership for Biotechnology and Medical Genomics to join us at the table. I have Dr. Eric Wieben, and Dr. Mark Paller. Paller, okay, thanks. Thank you for putting up with my mispronunciations. I'm familiar with names that get mispronounced, having one myself. So I didn't want to start this particular presentation or conversation without asking Senator Nelson to maybe tee up this particular partnership. I know Senator Nelson's been very involved in this one. So, Senator Nelson, maybe you could do a little intro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it's really exciting to have the genomics partnership in front of us today. You know, it was several years ago, and I know some of you were here and some were not, but back in 2003, actually, the state legislature was very instrumental in forming this partnership, this genomic partnership between Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota. And it's exciting to come back today then, and I'll look forward to hearing about the numbers of jobs, the dollars that this partnership has brought forth, and also teeing it up with the BioBusiness Alliance. And these are assets that our state has that we can really position for jobs in the future and for moving our state forward into the competitive biotech, bioalliance arena. And so I just want to welcome you, and I look forward to seeing what has transpired since 2003 when this was formed. And I know you've got good things for us, and then we'll look at moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. So I'm not sure who wants to lead off here, but if you could state your name formally for the record, and again, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Nelson, members of the committee, my name is Mark Paller. I'm the Executive Vice Dean of the University of Minnesota Medical School. And my partner for the partnership, as well as for this presentation, is Dr. Eric Wieben from the Mayo Clinic, where he is the Director of the Genomics Program. Thank you for this opportunity to update those of you who remember the history of the partnership, and several of you I know have been with us from the beginning. I'm also glad to see that there are a number of new members, so we have an opportunity to bring you on board. So we're going to give a very brief overview as we update everyone as to where we are in terms of the progress. I'd like to point out that this partnership, when we developed it, was unprecedented in the country. It was the first time two major research institutions partnering with the state and the private sector did something as bold and creative as what we've done. And actually, Dr. Wieben and I were guests at multiple other states to present the type of relationship and partnership that we had developed here. So I think that's important for you to realize that we broke some important ground. So, as I said, the partnership brought together the two major research institutions, biomedical research institutions in the state, the Mayo Clinic and the University of Minnesota. It is an important partnership. We began work on this in 2003 because we had strengths in biosciences and genomics, and that was the cutting edge of science and also the cutting edge of economic development related to the science. And because no single institution can really do what's necessary these days. Science has gotten big. It's a team effort, not an individual effort. We have incredible strengths when we join the assets and the abilities of the two institutions along with the state. And clearly, we're far more than the sum of the individual partners. When we started this, we realized that individually, the university and the Mayo Clinic had invested over $1 billion in genomics and the biosciences. We'd had a 50-plus year history in terms of medical devices, much of that work coming out of the university and Mayo Clinic. And for going forward, we had a number of synergies in terms of the expertise that we had at our two institutions.
And those synergies are nicely illustrated on this slide, which shows the two components of the scientific partnership we've got here as two pieces of a puzzle. And there's an important message in the way the slide is constructed because those two puzzle pieces aren't identical, but they fit together very nicely. And what you see on the left is some of the resources and investments that have been made on the Mayo Clinic side to get us ready to move this partnership forward. We have invested as an institution over $400 million in the general area of genomics and medical genomics, trying to apply our understanding of the human genome to questions of human health. We've got an electronic medical record that's really very far advanced, and we've built a number of other resources that I won't go through in real detail, but they're listed there. And they focus largely on clinical activities with enough of a research base to make us a good partner with the University of Minnesota, which is shown on the right-hand side of the slide. And again, you see that there's been significant prior investments in genomics in this area of science, moving it forward. And in addition to the strong basic science components and things like departments of structural biochemistry that we don't have and extensive computer resources, they've got a Center for Drug Design, which has been useful in helping us try to move some things forward coming out of partnership activity. And at the bottom, the Consortium on Law and Values and Health, something that helps address some of the ethical issues that get raised in this area of science. So where have we been? Well, in 2003, the idea of Mayo and the University of Minnesota cooperating in a joint scientific endeavor was not universally accepted, and there were a lot of skeptics around the state, including at both institutions. So we started modestly with $2 million investment from the state and $1 million from Mayo and $1 million from the University of Minnesota to see what we could actually do together. And with that initial investment, we actually funded four initial projects covering things like heart disease, prostate cancer, neurodegenerative disease, and obesity. And those projects were actually very successful beyond our expectations. And with that head start then, we moved into the next phase of really trying to build the partnership into something of sustained value. And in that phase, as you see up at the top, we were fortunate to get $21.7 million from the legislature for bonding for expanding our genomics space on the Mayo Clinic campus for partnership activities. And then there were some operating appropriations of $15 million in 2005 and another $15 million in 2006. And in 2006, we actually got a $5 million gift from Medica to support some of our activities, illustrating some of the value of the types of things we've been doing under the partnership banner for other groups around the state. Moving on from there, in 2007, there was a $25 million appropriation for the next biennium, and at that time, we were put into the base for $8 million continuing. The most recent state investment has typical of the type of things we have supported over the life of the partnership so far. We support competitive research projects in which each project has to have an investigator from Mayo Clinic working with an investigator from the University of Minnesota. And these are awarded on a competitive basis, so they go through a fairly rigorous review cycle. And we only have been able to fund about 20 to 25% of the total number of proposals we get in. Other partnership activities have been in the area of supporting some critical infrastructure, like new equipment. Again, in this area of genomics and what I do in my day job back at Mayo is to run some of our genomics facilities. And each one of the equipment purchases that we need to make to stay competitive there is fairly hefty in its price. And it really helps to have some support for that. The partnership also has been supporting some recruitment activities and some commercialization activities, and we'll go on with that. But with this most recent state investment, you can see that we've covered cancer, trying to identify new brain tumor drug targets and trying to develop some new therapies for cancer. We've done some things in the area of diabetes. You'll hear more about that later. We've tried to embark on the idea of developing adult stem cell therapies for cardiac disease, and we've begun some work in the area of diabetes prevention, including supporting a mobile obesity and diabetes lab that goes around the state to actually try and monitor the health of people and give us a good basis for moving forward. So all in all, we've got a total of 54 research and infrastructure projects that have been funded or completed or currently underway. That $5 million from Medica is highlighted again on this slide, and that was used to support partnership research teams in the areas of heart disease, cancer, and HIV research. And we have supported six new research positions. And these are paired recruitments, again, with one investigator coming to Mayo and another investigator going to the University of Minnesota for each of these three themes to help us fill gaps in our expertise that we need to maintain our competitive posture within the world community here. And those are in the areas of cancer experimental therapeutics, pharmacogenomics, and functional imaging.
And just to emphasize, those research positions were faculty positions. So those initial investments that allowed us to recruit those very talented and highly reputable faculty will continue to grow as we support them with our own institutional funds. Let me just highlight the progress that we've made. In addition to the projects that we've funded from the partnership money, we have, and this is a very conservative estimate, we've been able to obtain at least $80 million in new NIH funds that have grown directly from the projects that were initially seeded by the state money. So we've at least been paid back well. And this is, as you know, there's a timeline, so we would expect that this number will grow from the investment that's already been made. In addition, besides the $5 million from Medica, there's been a total of $20 million that's been raised in private or corporate funding or donations that have been directly tied to the activities that have been supported by the partnership with the state money. We've created or sustained between 2,400 and 5,700 jobs, depending on whether you use the NIH calculations or the U.S. Department of Commerce. We've had six patent applications so far. I think there are probably another four that we're aware of where there have been disclosures, but patents haven't been filed. We've had one startup company, and another one is very close to being spun out as a startup. As you can see from this this diagram, which is a timeline of product development, the biomedical and biotechnology economic development or company development is really a long process, unfortunately. And so if you look at box one and box two, we've already talked about our accomplishments there in terms of funding projects that are proof of concept and develop original ideas, getting NIH funding, creating new jobs. That leads to licensing of products, patents, and either incubators or new companies. That often takes 5 to 10 years, and we're only about 6 years into the timeline for our initial investments. Those projects that we funded in 2009, 2008 are even much younger. They're in the first 2 or 3 years of the project. So we're actually doing quite well based on this original projection. But as you can see, in the next 5 years, we'll expect these things to move, as we suggested, to move out into the private sector, where companies will be started or products will be licensed, technology will be licensed, and that will be the downstream events. And as you can see, the locus of where those activities takes place varies. So the university and the Mayo Clinic and our partners have been very much involved on the early development, the intellectual development, the engine that starts us all. But there are a number of other influences and factors that ultimately determine the final outcome as these inventions and discoveries move out into the private sector.
And as we've been doing the science, we've also put a lot of thought and energy into building relationships around the state. And since the BioBusiness Alliance of Minnesota is going to be the next presenter, I won't go into this in great detail. But the partnership involves not only Mayo and the University of Minnesota, but the state has been the major supporter of these activities and helping to drive these things forward. So it really has been a nice three-way partnership there. And I think that's a key component to the success. The second thing listed here is our formal agreement and working relationship with the BioBusiness Alliance, because part of our goals are to build new jobs within Minnesota, and the BioBusiness Alliance has embraced that goal of building jobs in the bioscience sector as well, and has helped us build the relationships and connections we need to try to make that more successful. And it's been a very good working relationship, and I consider them to be a key part of the bioscience ecosystem that we have here in the state, which is leading to some of the very positive results that Dale Wahlstrom's going to talk about. And on the edges of other things, we've also built some relationships with IBM. So both Mayo and the University of Minnesota have interactions with IBM. That's very important in this field of science, where we generate an awful lot of data. And we need good computer facilities to be able to turn that data into real knowledge that people can work with and turn into things that are useful in the economy. And, of course, Hormel hasn't been neglected. We've also funded projects that have involved the Hormel Institute. And are working closely with them to bring that talent into this pool of activity that we've been working on. And those relationships haven't stopped at the state borders. Bioscience is a worldwide activity, and if Minnesota is going to compete on the world stage, as it ought to, the partnership has attracted some international attention. And you see here that we're talking about relationships that we've formulated with the Czech Republic, with India, with South Korea, and Sweden. And there have been visits back and forth with representatives from the scientific establishments of each of these areas. And, for example, with respect to the Czech Republic relationship, there was a joint grant proposal that was presented to the European Union for some projects that arose from partnership activities to try to get some European Union support for these things. And we haven't heard the final outcome of that yet, but the last I heard was that it had made several cuts and it was still under consideration for European Union funding. The relationship with Sweden has been really facilitated in large part by our relationship with the BioBusiness Alliance. And again, trying to help us build the relationships there on an international scale where we can help to commercialize our activities there and connections to Mayo and the University of Minnesota might facilitate the outgrowth of some Swedish businesses here in Minnesota. So it's been a very nice synergistic relationship there.
Let me just briefly highlight where we believe we'll be going in the next few years. The partnership has examined, in addition to the broad activities we do in biotechnology and medical genomics, to focus more intensely on a major problem, one that we think we can uniquely contribute to and make a big difference, both in terms of the science as well as the economic development. And we seriously evaluated whether we should focus on Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, or heart failure. And after a lot of work, both with focus groups throughout the community as well as scientific focus groups, we've decided that the one which is most unique for our two institutions, which is as much of a health problem as any others, is diabetes. And so you're going to be hearing over the next couple years about our new initiative called the Decade of Discovery on Diabetes for the partnership as well as partners throughout Minnesota to optimally treat and ultimately cure diabetes. And to briefly summarize why, it's the seventh leading cause of death in the country. It causes blindness. It causes kidney disease. I'm a kidney specialist. I would love to be able to retire early and never have a diabetic patient again. The cost is phenomenal, $3 billion a year just in Minnesota alone. And the incidence of diabetes is completely out of control, particularly adult onset diabetes, in part related to obesity. So our long-term goal, 10-year goal, is to optimally treat and ultimately cure both types of diabetes, to build a statewide campaign to support our initiative and to engage numerous stakeholders in implementing this decade of discovery. And we have had discussions and will clearly involve health providers and health plans, corporate leaders, the life sciences community, the biobusiness community, public health institutions, policymakers, communities, and citizens. I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I do want to, in a way of introducing this, that this is a huge growth opportunity for Minnesota's business in terms of what might be the next area for them to work in. So we have the opportunity to lead if we continue to invest in this initiative. We have a solid foundation on which to build, and it's clear that we have the opportunity to keep making important medical advancements as long as we keep the opportunities going. So I think we'll be happy to answer any questions if there's time. Mr. Chair.
And I thank you, doctors, for I like the teamwork on the presentation, too. Good. Very a very good physical representation of the partnership between the U and Mayo. I mean, you guys sit in a very important space kind of between the public sector and the private sector. We need a strong Mayo. We need a strong university. And there's clearly a lot of impacts that you guys have on the topic of this committee, jobs and economic growth. So I know there's some of this members would come before the higher ed committee, but I appreciate you bringing this to us today. Members, any questions in particular for this group? Senator Kielash.
Yes, Mr. Chair. On your last, the partnerships, one of the things you said, a partnership with policymakers. I just wondered if you could expand on that a bit. Let us know what you need from us in order to continue your work, those kinds of things.
We certainly will. I don't think we're prepared to come to the legislature with a formal proposal right now. When we talk about policymakers, we mean, and I may have used the term incorrectly, but not only you, but also the Department of Health, for example, and Human Services, et cetera. And we've already had discussions with them about how we can link up with ongoing activities within the state that focus on diabetes. So that was the context in which we used that term.
Just to follow up, Matt, on policy, are you needing help with rulemaking or whatever to make sure that what you discover can be implemented in the community, that kind of help as well? Or
Mr. Chair, Senator, we may. I think right now, if there aren't any new statutes that interfere, I think we're okay. We have a demonstrated ability to do what we need to do, and this is just focusing on a particular disease. Clearly, if anything happens this year or in future years with regards to access to medical records, privacy issues, or limitations on the type of technology we could use, or clearly a worsening in the business environment that would make some of our private sector partners unwilling to invest in Minnesota. The companies we started speaking with are national companies, and they have opportunities to invest their R&D and development dollars elsewhere. So those are the kind of things that in the future might affect us. I think right now we would be able to accomplish what we hope to do.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the great presentation. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit more about the jobs that are tied to the NIH funding. I seem to remember a figure. I can't remember exactly what it was. You probably know as far as when $1 million comes in or how that translates into jobs.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Nelson, that's a good question, and that's why that particular slide was presented as a range. As you know, it's very difficult to calculate the true economic impact of dollars in the research field. So that range comes from two different numbers that we've seen published that come from reputable sources. The low number comes from NIH itself. So they put out a publication a couple years ago talking about the impact of every $1 million of NIH funding in Minnesota, because they had this broken out by each state, on the number of jobs that would support. And I think that number that they put out, again, Minnesota specified at that time, was 16 jobs per $1 million supported or sustained. The Department of Commerce, the U.S. Department of Commerce, when they go through their multipliers and look at economic impact, it's even higher. So that number, as I recall it, is 38. And that's another number that's been used. The reality here is that the NIH research activities are very important for the state's economy in a way that we seldom talk about. Because when $1 million of NIH funding comes to Minnesota, those are people who get hired to work on those projects or whose jobs don't go away because there's no funding to support those research activities. So even on the direct side, there's a real impact there. And then the purchase of goods that surrounds those NIH grants and the other connections and the indirect jobs that are created beyond that, it has a huge multiplier effect. So I'm not an economist, and I can't tell you which of those two multipliers is the best one to use, and that's why we presented it as a range.
Thank you.
One more follow-up. Senator Kulesh, sure.
Yeah, and one of the concerns that we've had is some of the great research that's been going on at the university and other areas as well as this. The jobs, when it gets to production stages or marketing stages, are also leaving the state. I'm just wondering if there's any stipulations of, you know, being able to keep these jobs as we move through the process. The state's invested in the research, and that's one question. And then the follow-up would be, is there any point when these patents, these licensing, will actually help self-sustain this organization or contribute much more to its ability to continue research?
Mr. Chair, Senator, these are questions that we put a lot of thought to when we first brought the partnership together. And I'll let Dr. Paller follow up. But in terms of the issues of, is there a preference for commercialization within Minnesota, that's clearly true. We didn't want to limit any possible commercialization to just Minnesota, because if there really are no possibilities for making something work within Minnesota, we didn't want to lose the economic value of our intellectual property coming out of partnership activities. But the fact is that both Mayo and the University of Minnesota have been very successful and commercializing intellectual property coming out of basic research. So I think the University of Minnesota in the latest survey was sixth nationally in its category, and I think Mayo was fifth or sixth in our category. And we do a pretty good job. And as the state environment becomes more friendly to this, and as venture capital begins to be more attracted to Minnesota, and as we have more opportunities to commercialize here, that is absolutely the first preference. Can you remind me the second parts of the question?
Whether or not these patents and licensures will lead to substantial contributions to your budget, and so that the state's investment.
Thank you. No, and that is the idea, is that over time, and again, as Dr. Powler mentioned, we're still in the very early days of this partnership, and it's only a very few projects that have actually been initiated, completed, and had some time to elapse to make intellectual property more valuable from that. But the long-term idea here is that the partnership could become more self-sustaining as we get income back. And there is a stipulation that any income back from partnership projects would be put back into the partnership.
Thank you.
I think at this time, members, then I'll ask Mr. Wallstrom and Dr. Willoughby to join us. I think this will be a pretty seamless transition. Thank you, Dr. Weaven and Dr. Powler. I hope you guys can stay. There may be some questions at the end of this presentation that could bring either the university or Mayo back to the table for members. Mr. Wallstrom, do you want to kick things off and introduce yourself?
Yes. Thank you very much, Senator Michelle. Give me a second here. I'm going to get this up. Maybe I'll get this up. There we go. Thank you for inviting us to come in and tell our story. We look forward to this. My name is Dale Wallstrom. I am currently the CEO of the BioBusiness Alliance in Minnesota. Prior to that, I was with the private sector. I'm retired Medtronic. I retired from Medtronic in 2006. Prior to that, I was involved in the computer industry and long history. But anyway, throughout all of that, my primary function has been the commercialization of technology, either to identify and acquire and grow it within a company, or in the creation of a new company. So that's been the role as we've brought this forward. That's that skill set that we're trying to leverage across our partners and our relationships and those who work with us. And maybe Dr. Willoughby, you want to introduce yourself.
Dr. Willoughby, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. My name is Kelvin Willoughby. I'm a professor of entrepreneurship and intellectual property at Curtin University in Perth, Australia, which is as far as you can get from Minnesota, as far as I can tell. I'm also a visiting professor at the Technical University of Munich in Germany and a visiting professor at the Hong Kong Polytechnic University in Hong Kong. So I'm a pretty international kind of person. But more importantly, I'm president of Willoughby International, the very famous firm. It's based here in the Twin Cities. I first met the BioBusiness Alliance in the early 2000s when I was a professor at the University of Minnesota in Management of Technology.
Thank you, Dr. Willoughby. It will be great to listen to you today. Hi. Mr. Wallstrom.
Thank you. This is what we're going to cover very quickly. What is BioBusiness? Who is the BioBusiness Alliance? What do we do? And what do we think we've accomplished so far? The common link for us and our relationship with the partnership and other organizations around the state is a common belief that we are now in the age of biology. And just to give you context, all ages are based on knowledge gained in the prior ages, whether you're talking about the atomic age, led to the space age, et cetera. These developments allow you to move into the next age. And we are currently in the age of biology, which means that to us that this is a time when our ability to control and to manage outcomes through biological methodology, such as the production of ethanol or the production of human diagnostic markers for predicting the diseases, those types of things. We've known about biology for thousands of years, but we're now finally actually able to do something with that. So that's a common link. biobusiness is all businesses that are based on the commercialization or the understanding of how to commercialize and support the commercialization of biologically based entrepreneurship or biologically based science. In Minnesota, we have about 34,500 jobs as of 2007 that are directly involved in the development of biologically based technology. If you take the multiplier and then the low end of multiplier, because again, this is a problem for all of us to find out which multiplier to use. So to be sure we can defend our numbers, we kind of always pick the bottom one. But there's about 120,000 other jobs on top of that that are related to supporting that industry. Our average wages are in this industry average around $62,500. There's about in Minnesota about $2.1 billion in payroll. Our dependency as a state, we are extremely dependent on this industry. In fact, Dr. Willoughby will show you some information, but we are about 43% more dependent on the bio-based industries than the average state in the union. Within our state, we have somewhere around 670 enterprises or companies.
Mr. Walster, I think we use the word dependency in a couple different contexts around here, so I'm just curious, and maybe Dr. Willoughby can interject at this point, but again, your bullet that we are 43% more dependent on biobusiness than the nation as a whole. We like jobs.
Yeah.
We like biobusiness jobs.
Yeah. We like it. In fact, we're very good at it. We are very, very good at it. Our economy is 43% more dependent or based on biologically based technologies than the average economy in the United States.
Perhaps if I could elaborate a little bit.
Dr. Willoughby.
This means that 43% more jobs in Minnesota are dependent upon this sector than jobs in the rest of the country. It's employment we're talking about with that particular figure.
Thank you. Thank you for the interruption.
Page 13 of the report.
Mr. Wallstrom.
Okay, thank you. So next question is, who are we? What are the alliance? We were created in 2005 as an industry-led spin-out based on Governor Valenti's Bioscience Council. We are an industry-led nonprofit organization with partners from industry, academia, government. We're all focused on trying to grow jobs and grow and stimulate the economy in this area. We have a strategic affiliation with Life Science Valley, but we also have strategic partnerships with other organizations such as MinNano, Minnesota High Tech, a number of them. These are the six industries that are listed here that we focus on. They are all, again, either currently undergoing revolution or about to undergo revolution because of our ability to engineer outcomes with biology. So what do we do? Fundamentally, we do three things. We assess, we plan, and we implement. And we started this process in 2005 with the development of an understanding of where we stood at that moment in time. Dr. Willoughby will be covering some of that in just a moment. We tried to start with where are we, get our hands around where is the state, what was the trajectory that we were on, and get some data to work with. Once we got that data, and you'll see in a moment that it wasn't very positive, we actually had some very negative trends, and things were not looking great. As a result of that, the board of directors made the decision that we'd move to phase two, which is a planning phase. We spent just shy of 2 years partnering with Deloitte to form a 20-year vision roadmap for the state, where we went out and we inventoried what was here. So we had a good map of what assets do we have in our toolbox to work with, and what areas were we unusually strong? What areas, if we chose to target, would we be able to play as a state a global dominant role in that market sector? And then out of that came a series of recommendations, and we then moved into in January of 2009, we published that report, and in January of 2009, we moved into the implementation phase. Implementation is is where we are now. And we were implementing the recommendations that came out of that study. So that's how we operate, is to assess, plan, and implement. And when we do that, it's around this picture. And I hope most of you have seen this. If not, you've all seen it now. But this is a picture that I will guarantee you will see again. This is a one-page illustration of the life science community in our state. The top box represents the six industries. This is where most jobs, most economic wealth is created there. And that is the role and responsibility primarily of the private sector. At the very bottom is what we consider the role of the public sector, our educational system, our infrastructure, our policies and whatnot that are necessary and are kind of foundational in which we build on. The green area represents what we call enabling knowledge clusters. Like the presentation you just heard from the partnership, they fit in this category. They're developing new knowledge, new information that can then be taken and brought forward and turned into jobs and economic wealth over time. That box in the middle called commercialization catalyst is the process that take new knowledge and move it into economic wealth in the top box. And that is primarily where we operate, is in that sector of the translational piece. So everything we do as an organization is based on the inventory that we took and the results of the status of our state in these various areas, and where all of our projects and all of our work is based on trying to fill in that hole, holes that are weaknesses or areas that are need to evolve because of the changing that's occurring in the industry globally. Okay, so in the assessment, I mentioned already, so I'll just hit briefly. We did our first one in 2006. The federal census data comes out every 5 years. It was just released again in 2010, so we just did an update. We chose that data because it is data that is based on actual performance. It's hard numbers. It's no projection in there. You can count it and see what happened. And we work with Dr. Willoughby because he's an expert in this area working with this information. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Willoughby to give you a quick summary.
Dr. Willoughby.
You have in front of you, I believe, an executive summary of the full report, which has all the substantial data that will back the information I'll give you. You can download it from the Bio Business Alliance website as well. The most important information that came out of the review I did for the Bio Business Alliance is that there's been a remarkable turnaround in the second half of the decade covered by this report. In the beginning, as Mr. Wallstrom mentioned, there was a decline in jobs and competitiveness in the biobusiness technology sector in Minnesota. But from 2002 onwards until 2007, there was an increase across the board in competitiveness in the state's position in biobusiness technology. My analysis broke down the industry into a number of segments, which I'll run through now. The most significant one, of course, is the medical devices sector. This is the most prominent part of the biobusiness technology in Minnesota, and it grew in its significance during this period. The most interesting thing about this is that if you look at the industry from the point of view of its efficiency or effectiveness in generating jobs, given the base load of companies and economic activity, Minnesota is number one in the nation as a job generator when you make these figures relative to the size of the state. Surpassed only by California in the absolute number of jobs. The performance of the medical devices sector in Minnesota turned around, as I said, in the second half of the decade, when the nation lost 11,000 jobs from 2002 to 2007 in medical devices. Minnesota gained 4,500 jobs. The percentage of employment in biobusiness technology that comes from medical devices is twice as large in Minnesota as it is in the rest of the nation. The conclusion we should draw from this is that a lot more is at stake for Minnesota economically in what happens to both the biobusiness technology industry more generally and the medical device sector in particular.
Dr. Willoughby?
Yes.
Excuse me. So as you walk through these various mm-hmm. sectors of the economy, I know your study stops at 2007.
Yes.
Now that's obviously that's literally where we drop off the cliff on jobs and the recession. So I wonder if you could add a comment in each of these sections as to, okay, what happened after 2007 or what have you been able to track since 2007, since the Great Recession, and kind of to update us for kind of where we are today. And I say that mindful of what we heard last week, members, from Mr. Hine, which was that Minnesota is now back to 1999 levels of non-farm employment. So today in 2011, our total non-farm employment is the same as it was in 1999. It's a striking and scary figure. So if you could just kind of update your numbers or comment on it where you can. I'm afraid if we stop at 2007, mm-hmm. we're all going to be left with, well, okay, where are we now?
Maybe I could jump in here, Senator Michelle. We have a slide coming up after this section that kind of lays that picture out. So maybe we can.
Del Wallstrom will give you a detailed answer to that question in just a moment, but perhaps I could make one very brief comment about it. The biobusiness technology sector is remarkable. It did not decline in Minnesota after 2007 during the global financial crisis period. It slowed down its rate of growth, but it still increased, actually. But Dale can talk about that in just a moment.
Thank you.
Let me talk a little bit about pharmaceuticals. You got the picture. Medical devices is the dominant domain in biobusiness technology. It's strong. It's much more competitive than other states in the nation. Pharmaceuticals is a field in which Minnesota is not recognized as being a major player. However, post-2002, against, shall we say, a weak starting point, employment in the pharmaceutical sector grew by 76%, and this was the fastest growth rate in the nation amongst our competitor states, and certainly much faster than the nation. So we're seeing a resurgence of medical devices when, in the first part of the decade, many people were saying, Minnesota has lost its opportunity in the life sciences. Let's give up and do something else. But in fact, there's been a resurgence in life sciences-related business, pharmaceuticals being an example. And I think what we see here is that we know there are technological linkages between pharmaceuticals and medical devices, drug delivery and new forms of artificial organs, etc. So we're seeing economic evidence that growth of the medical devices sector is linked to growth of the pharmaceutical sector and vice versa. Let me move ahead to the next sector, which we label agribio and bioindustrial technology. This is the application of biological technology to non-human applications. Ethanol production is the dominant area for this in Minnesota. Once again, this is an area we think about deeply in Minnesota, but we're still a small player on a nation scale. Nevertheless, employment grew during this period. So once again, it's a positive story. Caution, a note of caution here. Other states have also been investing very heavily in this field, both with intelligence, capital, and people. And our position is strong, improving, but weaker than our main competitors. We need to do something there to enhance our effectiveness in this particular area. Finally, a field I call research and development in the life sciences, which is effectively biotechnology research, but in the private sector, with other areas of biology research as well. Once again, Minnesota is not a major player in the nation, and many commentators some years ago were saying we've missed the boat on this particular industry. The facts say something else. From a relatively weak position earlier in the decade, Minnesota has once again performed better than the nation. During the period from 2002 to 2007, the nation lost 19% of its jobs in this area. Minnesota also suffered, but less so than the nation, contracting only by 8%. It's also important to note that there was an upsurge in entrepreneurship in this field. New companies, new enterprises, a 33% increase. So we see Minnesota emerging on an upswing, the same as in pharmaceuticals, and I think what's going here, once again, is that there's a link between biotechnology research, life sciences research, and the health of the medical devices industry. They're synergistic, and we see this appearing on the numbers here. In conclusion, Minnesota switched from being on its back foot with declining competitiveness in the first half of the decade. There was a turnaround in the second half of the decade. Something has changed in this state during that time period.
Good. And Senator Michelle, this is the question I think that you were asking earlier. This is a graph. This data is the hard data that Dr. Willoughby was talking about up to 2007, and then going in looking at extracting information and trying to recreate census data for 2008 and 2009. And what you see in this data is that actually the medical device industry has gone flat. In fact, it's down a little bit, but basically it's flat. This is actually jobs created. You look at the pharmaceuticals, which is a very positive trend. We went from 3,300 up to 3,800. It's down a little bit between 08 and 09. But again, these numbers are estimates. The trajectory is right. The magnitude is right. Absolute numbers will change as the data firms up. I want to just make a comment about that pharmaceutical area because of the question that was asked earlier by Senator Nelson. And that is that when you look at the pharmaceutical in our area, it's critical to the discussion that we just had around the partnership. The question about where does this information or where do these jobs coming out of work like the partnership or the university or Mayo are doing independently, but also the partnership, where does that land? And the question about how do we get that into our state. The reality is, if you go back to 1996, 1995, 1997, and even today, even though we've grown a lot and it's growing very well, we did not have the private sector enterprise in which much of this work that is being done in the biotech area and the biological area for it to land at. Because so many of these jobs and so many of the biologically based, the genomics, the proteomics-based activity is based on pharmaceutical-type skill sets. So there's been a really conscious effort to try to grow that pharmaceutical industry in our state because the skill sets coincide and they work in partnership with the device industry through combination products and other mechanisms to create an environment in which those kind of jobs can grow here. Up to that point, anybody, whether it's a private sector company or an academic research institution that spins out a new idea in those areas, would have to commercialize it somewhere else. It's almost impossible to commercialize it here. No venture capital, no managers, no workforce. That's changing. So as we look to the future, I feel extremely optimistic about our ability to take and land some of these technologies in our state and grow them here locally. And it's important not only for the a rapidly growing industry, but it's also important for our existing industries. You can also see that in the area of R&D and life sciences, the growth is very nice. It's slow, but it's nice. The point here is that we are dominated at the moment by an industry that's under fire, which is the device industry, and it's gone flat on a national basis. It's actually gone negative on a national basis as more and more companies are setting up operations overseas, and it's stabilized here in our state. So I don't know, Senator, if this is enough information on this one right now. Can we move on? Or?
Unless other members want to dive into that one, why don't you continue, Mr. Walsh?
I'm sorry?
Go ahead. You can continue.
All right. So so what do? We talked already about our planning process. That's an important part to us. We want to make sure that we're working to a plan and we're not just randomly moving about what we do. So I won't share any more with that. These are an example of some of the implementation steps. For the sake of time, I won't go into these except to say that they are all part of building the infrastructure that we need and the capability we need as a state to compete long term. There's basically two things that we do now that we're in the implementation phase. One is we lead projects that are focused on regional and we support statewide projects that cover the entire state. These are just a list of the ones that are, some are just starting out, some are well down the road and are close to implementation, some are done. But they're a list of the projects that are either recently completed or are in process. And as you can see, they are statewide. We cannot tell you the job creation impact of these projects. There's no way to measure that. We can tell you that over the course of the next 10 years, we feel very comfortable to say that these are the kinds of things that from which economic wealth spawns. So we'll let it go with that for now. These are filling holes in this picture that I showed you earlier, in this one. As we move to another area, the second thing we do is we give a lot of support to companies. So every year we go back and we call them up and say, the ones that we've supported, and we say, how have you done? How many people have you hired since you were started? Or whatever the event was. It could be a spin-out, whatever it is. And so in the last 3 years, we've supported 193 companies. Those companies are reporting to us as of December that they've created 2,707 jobs. They also asked another question, which is, how many jobs will you create in the next 3 years? And they added 2,186 to that total, so they're projecting to be at 2,4893 by 2013. Every year we add more companies, so that line will go up. But these are hard numbers, and these are not multiplied numbers. So now you'd want to take, if you want to get a total number, you'd take the multiplier, whichever one you want to use, and multiply it times that number. And if you take the lowest number, it comes in somewhere around 7,000. The other point on this is that those companies have raised about $133 million in capital since January of 2009. That's hard data. So what do we know? We do know that the assessment was kind of a wake-up call, because the data that we heard about or we got from Dr. Wilby in 2005 was alarming. Result of that, we now have a much better understanding of what assets we have in the state. And I want to repeat that, because the fundamental philosophy on which our partnerships work is that we take what we have and try to build on those instead of recreating from ground zero. So we now understand what those assets are. At the time we started that process, we knew of 600 organizations involved in this. We now know of about 2,700. So that number just continues to grow. And we're moving forward with an implementation plan based on that. So what are some of the things that we think we need to consider as we consider future growth? One is that these trends are positive, but they're very fragile. We need to continually work to improve our ecosystem. And I know some people don't like that word, but we don't have a better one yet. So things like the angel investor credit and the R&D tax credit are examples of things that you've done as a body that have been very helpful. We want to reinforce the importance of things like the University of Minnesota and the Mayo Genomics Partnership. It's extremely beneficial to us as we travel around the globe trying to attract investment and whatnot to have those kinds of capabilities in place. So continue to fund those activities. Fourth, I think you may have already seen it, there is a bonding request for a nanophysics building in the area of nanotechnology. We'd like to let you know we think that's important. It's important because every one of these industries that we support is being redefined by nanotechnology. So making sure that we have students and access to capability is very, very important. And finally, we know that you're aware of the S&T authority that's been created, and we have high hopes that that authority will allow us to take what's being done in this area and expand it across all industries. So that's an opportunity, we believe. So with that, I'll quit. We're probably over anyway. So, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Mr. Wallstrom. I wonder if particularly for our new members, if you could back up a little bit and just describe a little more about the BioBusiness Alliance. You're still a relatively new entity, but help folks understand how you are funded and how you kind of connect between the public and the private sector.
Okay. Mr. Walsh. Thank you. The fundamental role is the transition of taking new knowledge and turning it into economic growth, you know, jobs, companies. That's what we do. We are funded some from the state, and then we match so whatever dollar we get from the state allocation, we go out and we match that with private sector funds, grants, donations, various mechanisms that we leverage to do that. So it's a one-to-one match at a minimum. We have historically beat that match pretty consistently. So that's our funding mechanism. We depend heavily on our relationship or our execution side, the partnership between the public, private, and the academic sector. So we partner very closely with DEED, Department of Ag, some of the other state agencies, all of our academic institutions, and across the private sector. And we provide a translational capability between, as far as language and as far as projects and as far as business acumen, between the academic and the private sector. We also, because of conflict of interest type rules that academic institutions frequently have to deal with, as a 501c3 nonprofit that is not financially incented at all by what we do, we provide a safe mechanism for communication between institutions that frequently have those kinds of issues to deal with. So did that answer your question, sir?
Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for both of you. I attended a presentation at the Humphrey Institute recently about how important it is that we continue to invest in this area to really maintain the competitive edge in the state, because this is where we're known and this is what we do. And so there are significant, studies that show that Minnesota really needs to continue to grow this industry. But this conversation was more about these two aspects that you did in your presentation about dependency, what you call dependency, and I'm glad, Mr. Chairman, that you asked that for clarification, and wages. And so they argue that we do need to invest, and that if we really want to take care of the gaps that exist between people, you know, that need to enter the labor gaps that we have right now and underemployment in communities of color and minorities, this is where we need it to go. But there was a clear understanding in the group that was there, the Humphrey Institute, that your organization, the University of Minnesota, Mayo Clinic, have done nothing really to encourage that participation of minorities in these industries. And that really there is almost a systemic exclusion in terms of training young individuals that come from minority communities in these fields, and that we have no students in the field. Minsky and the university is really not recruiting, not doing, so that almost 100% of this industry today is basically white. And I want you to tell me a little bit more about your opinion of that, and what efforts have these institutions made, all of these institutions that are participating in this right now, made to change that?
Mr. Wallstrom.
Senator, I'm not going to be able to speak for all the companies and all the institutions. I can speak from my own personal experience. You know, when I was, for 30 years, I was in the industry. What I can tell you is that in my involvement as in that role as being a general manager of one of those business units, there was a very concerted effort. In fact, there were targeted schools where minorities were actively sought, because there were schools that attracted the minority population. And those schools were part of a consortium trying to draw people into this industry at a greater rate. I can also tell you there's a great success in those programs, and all you have to do is go to one of these companies and walk through the hallways and you'll see it. You'll see a lot of diversity in the hallways at the management level, at the engineering level, and especially at the scientific level. In fact, it seems that this is a generalization. I'd ask you not to write this down, because I have no data to back this up, but it seems to be a natural orientation for people to be interested in the core science. So in the laboratories and those kind of places, you will see what I would say a disproportionate number of, as a percent of a total population, of minority populations in those areas. I can also say that in regard to, like, the immigrants that are coming in from troubled countries, you know, those who are seeking asylum or whatever, and those are, you know, Somalia and others, that we have a large population here, that this is one of the few industries where we're still doing a large amount of manufacturing in Minnesota. And in those industries, there's a very high percentage in an active program to go out and recruit those people who are in need into those jobs. So I can't give you the statistics here today. I can only, again, recite from my personal experience. And I'll also say that Minnesota in total is not exactly the most diverse state in the union, so I think I wouldn't lay claim that it's that the industry is any more different than that. But I will. I do know there's a. I do know you could go to any company, especially any large company around here, and every one of them has an active program to try to bring people in. I would ask Dr. Wieben or Dr. Pallard to comment more about, you know, from an academic point of view, because I don't have insights into that. I'm not sure if I answered your question.
Dr. Willoughby, are you going to about Senator Torres-Ray here?
I could make two anecdotal observations that may be of assistance. This report does not directly address this question you ask, Senator. However, two interesting elements. The biobusiness technology firms in Minnesota are very active outside Minnesota and outside the country. In fact, this is inevitable because in the technology world, you must be multinational, even as a little firm, just to survive. So there's an internationalism which is built into these businesses, which is greater than is the norm for most businesses in the state. So that's the first observation, internationalism. The second is we see a lot of, there's a lot of data here indicating that the revenue that firms in Minnesota generate is much greater than the number of jobs that are locally located here in Minnesota. The companies here are earning money from their activities elsewhere in the world and elsewhere in the country. In short, connections to the outside world are much greater than average in this industry than is the case for other businesses in the state. This doesn't directly answer your question, I'm sorry, but that's the closest I could come to finding some evidence from this report that addresses your concerns.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I was wondering if you might comment as legislators, what would be the number one thing we could do? And I'm just to encourage this business. And my thought kind of circles around providing incentives for venture capital. But I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
I'll give you a general comment first. Again, if you look at this illustration, having the right workforce, having the right financial mechanisms to help bring in venture capital, angel money, strategic investments from other places, those types of things, which includes your things like the R&D tax credit, things like the angel tax credit, keeping those things going forward. Because those are the things that encourage people to take risk with their money. And that's really to me, is the key component, is that can the state do things that help to encourage people to take risk with their own personal funds or their corporate funds? Along with that, though, there are infrastructure things that are required to create the total environment, things like the nano building that's on your agenda. Those are all things that create an infrastructure and an environment that smart people and energetic people can engage into and do good things with. So there's if you're asking for a very specific thing, we can talk about some of those. But generally speaking, it's those kind of environmental things that allow us to continue to be noted as the place to go to so people put their money here.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wallstrom.
I'm sorry. I wonder if you could
let the other gentleman, Mr. Willoughby.
Mr. Willoughby, okay. Ready to rock. Sorry.
I'd be glad
Senator
to make
Howe
a...
And then Senator Cohen will follow.
My observation would be there was a turnaround in this industry in the second half of the decade. In fact, a 23% growth in jobs compared with a 1% decline nationwide for the whole biobusiness technology sector. I'm just the numbers guy looking at, you know, the objective facts. But I would say something changed inside this state during this time period. Look to see whatever it was, and that might give you a clue as to what should be done. So whatever happened after 2002 is where the answer lies.
All changed.
It's when Senator Metzen took over this committee, so everything went
great. That had flipped around, is that correct?
Did your survey pick that up?
I'll pay for the survey if... get the results you want. Would you pay for it?
That's right. Senator Howard.
That's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Senator Cohen, then.
Mr. Chairman, sorry for jumping in. Now, Mr. Wellstrom, what's the gold standard in terms of other states? I think one of the things around this place is we often lack context in what we're doing compared to where everybody else is. So what's the gold standard we ought to aim for, and why?
When you say gold, Senator?
What state or states are that much further ahead of us in terms of biobusiness growth, the encouragement of biotechnology industry, or are we just leading the pack?
Maybe I could inject a comment here. It depends on which area you're talking about. Every area has a focus, right? So if you take a look at devices, we are about as good as you can get. Everybody else looks at us. When you take a look at biotechnology, it's California, San Diego specifically, New Jersey, New York, those types of areas. So each area has an area of general focus. So the trick is to find the right balance for your resource base and the size of your population and your infrastructure. So for us, because we're an ag-based community and we're a medical device, that is the targeted area that we feel we as a state are uniquely positioned to really dominate where we elect to pick it to go. So to answer your question specifically, there are best practices in several states that we need to mimic, and we've looked at those. I mentioned California and New Jersey in certain areas. There's also North Carolina is doing phenomenally well. Wisconsin has picked up on certain areas, is doing phenomenally well in the area of agribio. They don't get any better than Iowa. So there's just a group of organizations or areas you have to look at to pick the best practices from each one. And it's not quite like there's one place to go to.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to jump back, actually, the comment about minorities not being included in the biobusiness fields. And, you know, I attended the Humphrey Institute as well that day, and I didn't really recall that comment, but I think it's something that really we should look at. And I'll just say my experience in the halls of IBM or the labs of the partnership or the Hormel Institute with Dr. Dong, any of those things, that's just not what we see. And I'm wondering if maybe those are some statistics we can get. I'm sure we have those, and we'd be glad to provide those. And also, maybe we should consider a tour, a biobusiness tour to some of these places on a Friday. If we can get away, consider a biobusiness tour so our committee can actually see these jobs of the 21st century and actually witness for yourself who are the people that are in these hallways. I think it would be very enlightening, and I'd like to follow up on that.
Very interesting.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wallstrom, one of the things that you commented on is that we don't have the skill sets for the pharmaceutical end of it. Could you just expand on that? What are we missing? Are we missing researchers or production folks, or, you know, where are we at?
No, thank you. Great question. Minnesota, I don't have the latest statistics, but on the research side from our university and our academic community, we ranked number 6 in 2006. I don't know what it is today, but given the investments that Mayo and University of Minnesota made, I'm sure we've only gone up. So on the academic side, we are very strong, and we do a lot. The problem that our academic community has is that there has been no private sector of any substance in our state to create a critical mass so that there are seasoned managers who know how to run pharmaceutical companies. There's not a workforce that we have. By the way, one other comment, our at the University of Minnesota, our chemical engineering community, our debt degree program ranks number 1 or number 2 in the world consistently. So we certainly are kicking out the chemical engineers to support that industry. Unfortunately, most of them have to leave the state to find a job. So what I'm saying is that what we haven't done on the private sector side, and this is a private sector concern, is to have enough companies here to create that supporting industry that the academics can leverage to commercialize their ideas. So we can beat the heck out of the academic community for not commercializing their intellectual property in Minnesota, but the reality is we haven't given them an industry in which they can tap into in many of the industries where they're doing much of their greatest work. So that's why in 2004, when we first started out, we saw that as low-hanging fruit, and that's been an area of intense focus for us. That's why we're so pleased to see this graph, that being the fastest-growing area, because it'll help everybody, especially our academic institutions. But we just don't have that. By the way, we have one venture capitalist in town who's made a couple of investments in pharmaceuticals. That's it. So we just don't have that ecosystem here to support that industry.
Can I just follow up, Mr.
Yes,
Chair? One of the things, my sister works for a company that does generics formulation, and that's in a pretty good-sized company in western suburb. Just wondering, is that what we're looking for, is folks that are doing that kind of thing already that need to venture into the initial drug distribution? Or are we looking at – I mean, part of it is I'm looking at, is there a huge difference between what those skill sets are and what we're looking for in the – rolling out new medications or whatever?
Mr. Wallstrom.
Thank you, sir. We're looking for exactly more of that. If you work in the medical device industry, as an example, and you get laid off, there's somewhere around 600 other companies you can go to try to get a job. If you get laid off in the pharmaceutical industry, and that community is small, and it's not connected too well. It's growing now, thank God. You know, but it's because of that we don't have the critical mass of skilled people that will branch out and create a new company and begin to keep that ecosystem beginning to grow and feed itself. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your question.
You are. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Senator DeCrafe.
Oh, excuse me.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Lilly. I'm not sure if I should address this to either Mr. Wallstrom or Dr. Willoughby, but I'm looking at the permitting process, and we've heard a lot of testimony in this committee about our permitting process and how it can get bottlenecked. How does that affect your industry, and what could we do to improve that?
I will respond to that. That's especially sensitive in the bioindustrial area, the area of bio-based chemicals, bio-based fuels, those kinds of things. There's a general impression, and I can't give you any firm numbers on this, but there's a general impression and reputation that it's a very difficult, complicated process here, and there are companies that we have tried to work with to get an expansion in Minnesota that said no, because there are other places they can go to that are where not necessarily easier, but there's a more predictable process that they can engage into to get an outcome in a timely manner. And right now, if you have the raw materials, if you have forestry-based products or you have agricultural-based biomass, there are many places where you can go to get that raw material. So it's an environmental it's an issue to work through, and I don't want to be misquoted here as saying that we're advocating for no regulation. That's not what we're advocating for. It just needs to be predictable and easily understood how to get through it, and I'll let it go at that. But there is an image for sure, no question about that.
All right, Senator Hall.
Chairman Lilly, thank you.
Chairman, I had the feeling that Mr. Willoughby might have wanted to reply to that as well.
All right. Mr. Willoughby.
I have no direct expert knowledge on this question. I think Dale Wallstrom is much more expert than myself on this. I could only speak from my experience in other parts of the world and other states in the Union, which is that when you have a vigorously interacting community which has a strong communication locally and internationally, sometimes the resources in both money and human resources are generated to overcome the obstacles of the regulatory environment. So I don't really know how severe the problem is, but I could say when you've got the right institutional and human capabilities, you can solve these problems more easily than elsewhere. And there appears to be evidence that this state has been developing these capabilities in recent years.
And now, Senator Hall.
Chairman Lilly, thank you. Mr. Olson, Dr. Willoughby, there's, you know, the taxpayers of Minnesota have been asked to make an investment in a bioscience park, and that investment's being made partly in infrastructure. But there's a bioscience park, I believe, down in Florida. I think there's another one in Canada. I was just wondering if, you know, speaking of this private sector and the ecosystem that we need to develop, how are they doing currently, and what's our chances for success?
When you mention Senator?
Mr. Wallstrom.
Thank you. The first time this year, so I can't practice, sorry. there are many different kinds of incubators in parks and whatnot in the country and in the world for that matter. And we've looked at them, you know, in Europe, several in different countries in Europe, several across the United States. We've been to the one in Toronto, which I think you're probably alluding to, which is global recognition. And they range from incubators that are one building to incubators that are campuses to incubators that are actually not even a building. It's an organization that provides helps provide financing, helps provide support and mentoring and coaching. So there's many different ways of doing it. The one that has seems to have the most easily recognizable and probably most measurable outcome are places where you actually make an investment in a place that brings together common people of common minds and common capabilities to kind of create that local environment so that you can grow and expand. In Minnesota, I would submit we have one of the best incubators in the world, and science parks in the world. It just happens to be virtual. It's everything from St. Cloud to Rochester, and it's an area of medical devices. And yet there is no one building around it. But once you get into that system, and if you've got a good idea, it'll help you be successful as an entrepreneur. So I'm giving you a long answer because there is no crisp answer except to say that if we can provide a park, a center that we can align with the academic institutions and create partnerships that allow, as well as our private sector R&D organizations, the one that Dr. Willoughby's report refers to, that if we can create that community, they are tremendously beneficial. And then what we have in developing new companies and new technologies that can be licensed by or sold to large companies. And it creates, again, I use the term ecosystem, but it's an important part of that. What we have in devices right now is unusual. It's rare. It's the only place I've seen it in the world, actually. So I think that to get a lot of these other areas growing and expanding, we do need these kinds of parks, whether they be a research park or an industrial park. You know, we need a mixture. Am I answering your question, sir?
Yeah.
All right. Senator Metzen.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman Lilly. I think the logical next step is for you or somebody to help the Senate, help the House on how to give incentives to companies going forward, whether it be job credits, tax credits, something, because it troubles me that we, you said earlier, at taxpayers' expense pay for these people to go through college and they learn it on our buck and then leave. We don't want them to leave, particularly because we're paying for their education. And secondly, how do we help us, your team or somebody, how this committee can help us go forward in retaining these people and getting them to work in this area and keep them to stay here? Think of some ways Does the state, through deed or something, pay, I'm grabbing now for something, half the salaries of these people for 1 year, like I think we did years ago under the Mead program? And then they tell me that about 75-80% of those people, even after the fee goes away, the half pay, they retain, the employers retain those people. So I'm looking for some help here. I certainly don't have the answers. I think the committee would like to know how, again, we retain these people, what we can do as a state senate to give incentive for these companies to hire these people. So we're looking for a little, or I'm looking for some help.
Okay.
Mr. Wallstrom.
Okay. Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair. We will go away and take a look. And again, I want to make one point clear. It's not always money. You know, sometimes it's about environmental issues. And your question, though, as I understand it, is targeted specifically. By the way, when I say environmental issues, I'm not talking about our the environment we're eating, where we're breathing in. I'm talking about the business environment. And some of those, as an example, we have identified a number of policies that have unintentional language in them that are limiting other limiting companies from moving forward. And those will be coming forward as are clarified one at a time. There's no money involved. It's just changing some language that wasn't intended to be what it was. Because but if I understand your question, Senator Mensa, you're asking us to go back and come in specifically with incentive-type recommendations targeted at employment. True?
I think that's true. And globally, it's not just money. It's put a package together to help us out a little bit. Thank you.
Mr. Willoughby, did you have thoughts also?
I could add one thing to that, and it perhaps bounces off Senator Howe's question about incubators. In my work in a number of places around this, I've discovered incubators work when they facilitate communication and interaction between the key players, entrepreneurs, financial advisors, technical specialists, universities. So it's the intangible dimension that makes the difference. In many places I've been, state governments or federal governments subsidize incubators to facilitate job growth, but what happens is firms that are already there just relocate to subsidize real estate. Looks good in the numbers because they're full of firms, but there's no real net addition. What makes the difference is the human-centered facilitation of interaction and learning. So I would suggest something along those lines is likely to have more bang for the buck than subsidies for firms, but both can work.
All right, Senator Cohen, I believe we have time for one more very quick question.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Look, I don't mean to be provocative, but Dr. Willoughby, I was struck by your background. You've taught here, Perth, Hong Kong, and I forget the fourth.
Munich, Germany.
Okay. So I'm just curious on a comparative basis where it strikes me that the United States is somewhat unique among the Western countries where there's this developing fight between science and politicians. And I'm wondering if that makes any difference in terms of location of research, or if our research universities are so strong in the United States that that just is irrelevant.
Mr. Willoughby.
Very good question. Thank you, Senator. I would say most countries around the world have been watching the United States during the last two or three decades and trying to invest heavily in scientific-based technology development and business development, and many are making very good progress. Germany is certainly in this category. Germany has very high business costs, you know, taxes, land, you know, usual things, and they used to be very conservative in terms of entrepreneurship and risk-taking. They're changing. There's a much stronger entrepreneurial climate there. I've done a lot of work in Korea, same kind of thing, heavy investment in science-based business development. So I think there's more competition around the world from science-based investments in other countries. And even China is having indigenous scientific and technological development, which is challenging U.S. firms as well. I don't know if that answers your question. The competition is greater worldwide. So I think here in the United States, we cannot take our previous position for granted. We have to be aggressive in local business development and reaching out to the world and connecting with partners and competitors elsewhere.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wahlstrom and Dr. Willoughby. Thank you for your testimony. It's been very interesting hearing about biotechnology today and the biobusiness opportunities. We did talk about fragile risk and opportunity and dependency, and I'd like to talk about the growth, that there are growth opportunities here in this industry, and it's exactly the type of industries that we need to see that future growth. I'd like to remind the committee that we do have a meeting tomorrow at 10:30, and we will hear from Scott Anderson from Wells Fargo. He's an economist sharing some information about jobs in the environment. So thank you all.
Thank you.